The following program is produced and furnished by Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Hello and welcome. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Paul Kortz, Director, Functional Champion, Military Health System, Defense Health Agency. Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships, Center for Devices and Radiological Health at the FDA, and Mr. Scott Blackburn, Acting Chief Information Officer, Office of Information Technology at the Department of Veterans Affairs. We're going to discuss the challenges facing us today with medical device security. Thank you all for joining me today. So I'll start with Dr. Schwartz. Last month you were speaking and you said that the approach that we're taking to medical devices is evolving. Can you expand on that?
Oh, absolutely. So we've seen over the past few years that the state of cybersecurity within the healthcare ecosystem and medical devices specifically has been one that has been evolving. And this has been a journey for all of the stakeholders, medical device manufacturers, healthcare delivery organizations, and for us at the FDA as well. So as we mature, as we come to learn more, as we experience some of the challenges within the cybersecurity realm, we are evolving as well in terms of what our expectations are of the industry and how we move from point A to point B to point C to generate greater and greater strength of cybersecurity within the healthcare space.
So when we look at medical device, we kind of relate them to Internet of Things. They're connected devices that kind of now we have to approach what we're looking at. But a medical device, depending on the agency, depending on the device, can be on the network for a period of time. Do we have an average or a knowledge of how long that is on the network from start to finish once we buy it?
So there's a good spectrum of device lifetime, life cycle, and you can have devices that are considered legacy devices. Many of the imaging equipment, for example, that hospitals will procure, it's with the intent that those be capital expenditures, that those are investments that are intended to last for a good long time. That can be 10 years, 15 years, and in some cases we've seen devices that have actually been in use for even longer than 15 years, upwards of closer to 20 years. You compare that with other devices where the devices may turn over within a shorter lifespan. But I think that gets to the point of the problem here with regard to how do you maintain the security posture of a system and of the devices on that system when these devices were initially designed many years ago without the same level of rigor in terms of security, the same robustness of security built into them. So this is where we really see this as a community challenge that we're working towards addressing.
Mr. Blackburn, you have, by many lists, the largest healthcare system in the country. Millions and millions of medical devices. Is there an approach that the VA has taken to tackle these?
There is, and thank you, Sean. It's an honor to be on your show, and congratulations on the first show here.
Thank you so much.
Veteran care and patient safety is our primary focus, and right now at the VA, we're going through a process to really modernize that care, and this is a big priority, as Susan mentioned. It can take 10 years or even longer to replace a lot of these medical legacy medical devices, and mitigating security issues is a key component of modernizing VA IT. So as we work internally with equipment and software vendors to ensure our systems use the most up-to-date security methods and provide continuous monitor and alerts, you know, VA employs an in-depth strategy that we call Medical Device Protection Program to really mitigate the risk of operating older devices on the VA network and taking care of our patients' data and security is imperative for us.
So, Dr. Kortz, on that, you have the functional management. And you bring in providers who are specialists in each one of those areas. How are you attacking the medical device problem?
Yes, well, very similar to the two previous speakers here, Sean. I'd like to speak to the older medical devices and the newer medical devices here. Every device we have that is connected to the network creates some level of risk, perhaps the older devices more than the new devices. We're aware of that. We use a risk mitigation framework called the risk mitigation framework. And that when we do that assessment of the device, we come up with a detailed plan and milestones to mitigate all the risks. And so that helps us ensure a level of confidentiality, integrity, and availability of our devices that are critical in the IT domain. And this is important to the providers, too. The providers want, they want to know that their data is safe and that it's available. And so that's very important to the doctors, the nurses, the medical technicians in our system. The other piece I'd like to mention is we're trying to get our arms around the inventory of disparate medical devices in our system. If we have, for example, 15 kinds of intravenous pumps, perhaps that number could be reduced from 15 to 3. Or if we have 25 types of defibrillators, why couldn't that number reasonably be 3 to 5? And so we reduce the number of that type of device in our inventory. And we think that that would lead to more efficiencies when it comes to doing this RMF framework.
And Scott, I believe you're using the RMF framework as well.
We are.
Dr. Schwartz, when we look at all these different type devices, I think DHA has 4,000 different devices. And Dr. Schwartz talks about it. Is standardization part of the first step in bringing this risk down?
When you speak about standardization, are you talking about the use of the adoption of various standards?
Selecting fewer devices. So having similar devices on the network so they can have one approach and kind of know how that device reacts on the network.
You know, I think that that's very much a decision of a of an individual healthcare delivery organization as to what suits their particular architecture. And I think that the points that Dr. Schwartz made regarding having an inventory of one's assets from a device perspective is absolutely crucial. And that is an area that we have heard in our discussions with many healthcare delivery organizations can be a struggle. Because in order to be able to secure a device, you have to know what you have. You need to know what's on your network. So establishing that inventory and then being able to monitor what's on the networks are initial preliminary steps that become really important. But with respect to whether the standardization should be undertaken, I do think that's something that would be individual to the organization and the FDA wouldn't necessarily weigh in on one way or another.
My guests today are Dr. Paul Schwartz, Director of the Functional Champion Military Health System at the Defense Health Agency, Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, the Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships, Center for Devices and Radiologic Health at the FDA, and Mr. Scott Blackburn, Acting Chief Information Officer, Office of Information Technology at the Department of Veteran Affairs. CyberChat on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
With all the noise, how do you hear what you really need to? Turn off the noise. Turn on federalnewsradio.com. Fresh wisdom served daily by a team of award-winning journalists like Jason Miller, Tom Temin, and Jared Serbu. federalnewsradio.com. Experience the difference.
Welcome back to CyberChat on federalnewsradio.com
and 1500 AM. My guests today are Dr. Paul Kortz, Director of Functional Champion Military Health System at the Defense Health Agency, Dr. Suzanne Swartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships, Center for Devices and Radiologic Health at FDA, and Mr. Scott Blackburn, Acting Chief Information Officer, Office of Information Technology at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Scott, has the EO, the executive order that was put out early in the administration, helped with this area of concern of medical devices?
I think it has, Sean. I think the EO, the cyber EO, has helped in two areas. I think number one, it has really helped the VA collaborate with other federal government partners, whether it's on medical devices or other topics. And I think since the EO has been released, we've seen an increased federal agency collaboration and information sharing across the medical device space and other areas as well. I think number two, it's really helped with mobile security as well. And it's really enabled the VA to make more risk-based decisions regarding mobile security, particularly on mobile business transactions with veterans and business partners. And that has really helped us.
Dr. Paul Kortz, earlier you talked about the functional program where you have clinical nurses, doctors that help make decisions about purchases in medical equipment and medical devices. How does that work when it comes to a medical device?
Yes. Yeah, so, Sean, we've recently created a medical device task force that's actually led by a clinician, but it includes cybersecurity experts, analysts, logistic experts, and biomedical engineers. So really there are two issues here. One is around patient safety, and I believe in the military health system we have a very robust patient safety and logistics community, and they are able to communicate effectively, I would say, in terms of warnings and alerts and defect notices when it comes to medical devices. But the other piece is the cybersecurity issue. And, how do the functionals view that? Part of the role of the MDI task force, the medical device task force, will be to go to one of our hospitals, say, what medical devices do you have? And then create that inventory and then ask the clinical functionals, what devices need to be connected to the network, because perhaps they don't all need to be connected to the network. And then the piece about the risk management framework. If risk management framework is performed in one of our hospitals, do we have reciprocity so the next hospital doesn't have to repeat the work associated with doing an RMF? And then the piece I mentioned earlier about some standardization and creating this comprehensive list of medical devices across our entire system. And one other piece I'd note is our clinical teams move around between our hospitals and our healthcare systems. Perhaps that's a uniqueness that would lead to wanting us to have fewer medical devices, as well as the need to have a medical device that's functional both in our garrison hospitals as well as in an operational environment.
Dr. Swartz, as it comes, they say on average, on literature that I've read, I'm not an expert, but that from the design to the element to the point in which a medical device gets their device ready for sale, it takes them around 18 months. Once it gets to the FDA, what does that process look like?
So depending upon the type of medical device that's coming to the FDA, and FDA regulates medical devices based upon on a risk basis. So we have class 1, class 2, class 3 devices. And depending upon the risk level of the device, that will determine the kind of submission that a manufacturer, that a vendor would provide to the agency. And as a result of that determination, the time that it takes to review the information that comes in the submission may differ. It may differ. So class 2 devices, which are often what we call cleared for marketing, they come in with something called a 510K pre-market notification. And the process for a class 2 device to get cleared and be available to the market is going to generally be much more streamlined than what would be the highest risk device called a class 3 device, which warrants something called a PMA, a pre-market approval application. And because of the evidentiary basis that's needed in order to support a PMA, it's going to take longer time, first of all, for that device review to be done, because there's often a lot of clinical data as well that has to be carefully gone through to determine what we call a reasonable assurance of safety and effectiveness. You can vary anywhere from a 510K, a Class 2 device, being cleared in a period of, you know, I would say, I can't give you what the actual averages are, but in, you know, several months to a year to 2 years, and a PMA can sometimes take somewhere in the range of several years, depending, again, upon the complexity of the device.
So, Scott and Dr. Paul Kurtz, so the question is, you have millions of these devices, and as you try to get ready for your FSMA audits and try to get these devices on the network, and you have these legacy devices, how do you approach such a problem? I mean, how do, from a functional level, from a physician standpoint, and from a CIO standpoint, really look at a problem like this and say, I can make short-term and long-term gains, but this is where I would go at that?
Well, it's a challenge, particularly at the VA. We have 168 major hospitals, you know, over 1,000 clinics all across, and we need to make sure that, you know, as Dr. Schwartz mentioned earlier, that the physicians have the right pieces of equipment in place to be able to do the right clinical, you know, opportunity. At the same time, having to, you know, secure the patient's data. And it is a big challenge. So I think this is an area where, you know, we need to work very closely with our partners in the Veterans Health Administration, the doctors, clinicians, to make sure that we're doing the right thing, that we're putting the right equipment on a risk-based fashion, as Dr. Schwartz mentioned. But at the same time, making sure that we're modernizing to get the our veterans the care that they deserve.
So with those kind of timelines that Dr. Schwartz just gave us, you know, we look at in the budgets, our budgets are shrinking. Is this something that we need to look at a technological control, or do we really need to start looking at removing some of these devices from the network? And how does that really impact patient care?
Well, I'll take that, Sean. You know, we understand that the government budgets are shrinking, but this has to be solvable. We don't have a choice here. The devices have to be secure. We're certainly acutely aware of instances of malware and hospital systems being locked out of their electronic health record. We're also acutely aware of the risk of the release of PII, personally identifiable information, and protected health information. So we're acutely aware of those risks. But so we're having to provide safe, high-quality care for our military beneficiaries on the one hand. On the other hand, having to protect the DoD systems from our cyber threats. So I do think it's a challenge for us. And so... we're managing our devices, we're identifying them, we're looking at their risk framework and mitigating the risk. We've created an architecture that will segment the medical devices from our rest of our network, and we're moving forward to deploy our new electronic health record, MHS Genesis.
My guests today are Dr. Paul Kurtz, Director of Functional Champion Military Health System at the Defense Health Agency, Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, the Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships, Center for Devices and Radiological Health at the FDA, and Mr. Scott Blackburn, Acting Chief Information Officer, Office of Information Technology at the Department of Veteran Affairs. CyberChat on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
John F. Kennedy once said, "The greater our knowledge increases, the more our ignorance unfolds."
If you are a CIO of a government agency, you know what that means. That's why there is federalnewsradio.com. Because it's not just about gathering intel. It's about gathering the right intel. Wisdom served daily by a team of award-winning journalists like Jason Miller and Tom Temin. FederalNewsRadio.com. Experience the difference.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. My guests today are Dr. Paul Kortz, Director, Functional Champion, Military Health System at the Defense Health Agency, Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships, Center for Devices and Radiological Health at the FDA, and Mr. Scott Blackburn, the Acting Chief Information Officer, Office of Information Technology at the Department of Veteran Affairs. Dr. Schwartz, from the device standpoint, are we talking about protecting data? Are we talking about protecting patient safety?
That's a really important question, Sean, so thank you for asking. And of course, FDA is concerned that patient data be appropriately protected and that data actually not be in some ways manipulated either, because integrity of data becomes important from a patient safety standpoint as well. But I want to put our focus for today on the fact that devices, since they are providing such important functions, if the performance of that device is somehow impacted as a result of a security vulnerability that's been exploited, then the performance of that device can result in consequences to the patient that could bring about patient harm. And so from our perspective, our mission being one of protecting and promoting or protecting and advancing public health, we want to make sure that where cybersecurity and patient safety cross over, that we've provided appropriate recommendations and we've set what those expectations are for manufacturers as they, number one, design and develop new devices. So on the pre-market side, and we've done that through our policy, our pre-market guidance, as well as taking the holistic view of making sure that devices, once they're deployed, once they are already in distribution and in use, that there are expectations and that there is a management program of risk for those devices throughout its entire lifetime until it is ready to be obsoleted.
Okay, and Dr. Kortz, from a strategy for Internet of Things, connected devices, does DHA have a strategy?
Yes, Sean, we've been thinking carefully about that. And, you know, mention was made about cybersecurity in the device, of course, which we're interested in. But then we have an architecture that provides a secure network of the Internet of Things devices, such as alarms, temperature monitors, sensors, and things like that. But two other areas we're thinking about. One example is in our intensive care unit. We want medical devices to talk to each other. So if we have 10 devices that are used to monitor a patient, we want those devices to be able to talk to each other in assessing the sickness of that patient in our intensive care unit. So that's one point I'd like to make. And the second is we're looking at consumer wearables and the consumer Internet of Things. It's things such as activity monitors, home blood pressure and glucose monitors, Bluetooth connected to your weight scales and smartphone apps. And these pieces of health information about a patient are useful to the providers. So we like to have a system and a process whereby we can capture the health information of our patients in our electronic health record, with the ultimate goal of having a personal health record which patients could use to store all of their medical and health-related data.
Scott, I'm going to ask everybody their final thoughts as we go into the closing of this program, but I have one critical question. I hate to put you on the spot. Boston or Cleveland, the World Series?
Red Sox, all the way.
All right, I just want to make sure. Scott has close connections back to the Cleveland area, so I wanted to see if he was going to portray that one. So, Scott, I'll let you kick it off. Final thoughts that you'd like for our listeners to hear.
Well, I think as we all move forward and we're really modernizing government and modernizing healthcare at the same time, there's all kinds of exciting opportunities, whether we're talking about wearable devices and the Internet of Things to improving patient safety. I think there are tremendous opportunities and we're very, very excited to pursue those opportunities. But I think as we've talked about today, making sure that we're both maintaining the integrity of the devices and patient safety, protecting data and information. I think this is only going to be a more and more important topic, and that this is things that we have the responsibility to make sure that we're staying on top of them and being industry leaders.
Dr. Schwartz?
We're very excited at the FDA about the work that is being done really throughout the entire community, and we're seeing more and more involvement and proactive efforts by our manufacturers and other members of the stakeholder ecosystem. So this is not only inspiring, it's very gratifying, and I think that it's going to take time. As I said at the beginning, this is an evolving journey, but we're making great strides, and we're looking forward to continuing to push that envelope further, especially as we look to engage more of our physicians and patients as part of this dialogue.
Dr. Kortz, definitely last but not least.
Sean, thank you very much. And on behalf of my colleagues, thanks for the invitation. I'm very pleased to be sitting next to my colleagues from the FDA as well as the VA, particularly as it comes to the electronic health record and the opportunities we have there. But huge opportunity, we think, for standardization across our military healthcare system. Shout out to three offices here that really have been rapidly improving our cybersecurity posture. And that's the Department of Defense CIO's office, AT&L, which is Acquisition Technology and Logistics, specifically the Program Executive Office for MHS Genesis, as well as our cybersecurity experts within the Defense Health Agency. So I really feel like we're rapidly improving in our cybersecurity domain.
Well, thank all three of you. I think this is a topic that we will continue to discuss and it will continue to evolve, as Dr. Swartz said at the beginning. My guests today have been Dr. Paul Kortz, Director of Functional Champion Military Health System at the Defense Health Agency, Dr. Suzanne Swartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships, Center for Devices and Radiologic Health at the FDA, and Mr. Scott Blackburn, Acting CIO, Office of Information Technology at the Department of Veterans Affairs. I am Sean Kelly, and thank you for listening. You can also follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly. We will see you next month.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show at federalnewsradio.com. Search Cyber Chat.
Profile America, Friday, October 13th. With the national median age being 37.9 years, only half of the country's population experienced life in what might strike young people as a bleak, dark, and difficult age. Practically unimaginable today, there was a time when cell phones didn't exist. The first modern cell phone was introduced on this date in 1983 in Chicago. It was demonstrated in a call to Alexander Graham Bell's grandson in Berlin, Germany at the time. The phone's price was $3,995. In 1990, there were just over 5 million people in the country with cell phones. By 2000, that number was nearly 110 million. Now, 95% of Americans have cell phones or smartphones. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.